Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Robert Lipsight, who's a longtime sports and city columnist for The New York Times and the author of the recent memoir, An Accidental Sports Writer, just out in paperback, and Sports World and American Dreamland. He was a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning and for the NBC Nightly News, and in 2001 he won the American Library Association's Margaret A. Edwards Award for Lifetime Achievement in Young Adult Literature. His young adult novel included The Contender, One Fat Summer, and Center Field. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Lipsight.
It seems like kind of a violent day for you. Wall Street, Israel, and football.
Well, you know, everybody's stacking up on their potato chips, and people are going to be showing up soon to watch America's favorite blood sport. But just recently, Robert, the president, in an interview with the New Republic, said, "I have to tell you, if I had a son, I'd have to think long and hard before I let him play football." So, do you think that football is going to be affected at the youth level? In other words, are parents going to be starting pulling their kids out of these Pop Warner youth?
I sure hope so, Ian. I think that anybody who at this time, you know, has a kid in Pop Warner or Pee Wee football should be arrested for child abuse with what we know now. With the 4,000 lawsuits against the NFL by former players, we kind of have the feeling that, you know, your head got crunched in your 10 seasons with the Green Bay Packers. But on the other hand, you know, you were well compensated for it and you were an adult. But I think that the truth really is that it's a lifetime of small insults to the brain, starting when you're, you know, 8, 9 years old and banging helmets with another little kid, that really adds up to these problems. But getting back to, you know, your quote from the president, number one, it's really about time. I wouldn't let my son play high school football 30 years ago. You're still angry about it. But more important, in that New Republic interview in which he discussed football, the discussion had come out of a discussion about gun violence. And I think that it's almost impossible to look at football and the ramifications of football in America without looking at some other things. First of all, football is the last bastion of masculinity, faux masculinity, traditional masculinity, whatever you call it, in America. And this is after the concussion discussion began, women were admitted to get killed in combat, which is, I guess, a progressive thing. And there's been this assault on assault rifles, and the whole attack on guns in America is kind of an attack on traditional masculinity as well. So that's why, metaphorically, football is so important, and why any kind of assault on the violence of football, making it a feminizing football, as some critics have said, would be a real attack on an aspect of American culture. I think it would be very hard to change football and keep it as popular as it is now. I mean, I think, you know, flag football, touch football, these are wonderful events. It's really fun to play, but they're really in the category of ultimate frisbee.
So, Robert Lipsight, you're talking about a broader issue of cultural violence here in the United States, and it's certainly come to the fore following the shooting in of the school children in Connecticut. And obviously the NRA is trying to deflect the argument by blaming it on the movies and on violent video games. But on the other,
is it interesting, Ian, that they've never blamed it on football?
Well, this politically, they know what their constituency is, right?
Right, exactly.
But the point is, though, Robert, is that you can blame a lot of it on Hollywood and on video games. I mean, they're not wrong. They're just right for the wrong reasons.
Well, I think, you know, Of course. I mean, I think to focus totally on guns is ridiculous. People are shooting the guns. Unstable people are acquiring the guns. The whole idea of shooting people. I mean, the guy who wrote American Sniper, the guy who killed from the sniper position, who killed more Iraqi enemies than anybody else, and now is taking, veterans, troubled veterans, in a therapeutic situation, was just murdered yesterday on a gun range when he took a 25-year-old vet, who had
PTSD
problems.
Yeah, PTSD. So, yeah. And when, by the way, PTSD is not that different from what I understand. In fact, these explosions that U.S. servicemen survive in these IEDs that they survive in both Afghanistan and Iraq has a similar effect. It's called chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE, which is because of the brain being jolted around so much and so often. Now, in terms of the National Institute of Health, they autopsied the brains of 34 deceased NFL players, and 33 of them were diagnosed with CTE. So there's a connection there. I mean,
there's absolutely a connection, and this is empirical. But a friend of mine, a former NFL player named Jimmy Stewart, he was known in his time as Mad Dog. He was one of those linemen who really came in to kill you. But he has progressed since, and he is a licensed therapist now. And he basically works in what he calls hypermasculine communities, which is the military, police, and firefighters. He works with them, and he is going around making exactly the point that you're making, that there is a real connection, he believes, between the kind of damage, the head trauma damage, that those guys are getting, and how they deny it, as with NFL players. I mean, there is a culture in all these places of being brave and stoical and taking a certain pride in, quote, getting your bell rung, which, sure, of course, is what we now know is a concussion and is a very dangerous injury.
Yeah, and of course, unlike the NFL players who get compensated with millions of dollars, the soldiers don't get anything like that compensation.
Nor do they get very good care afterwards.
So again, I'm speaking with Robert Lipside, longtime sports and city columnist for the New York Times and the author of a recent memoir, An Accidental Sports Writer, just out in paperback, and Sports World and American Dreamland. He's been a correspondent for CBS's Sunday Morning and for NBC Nightly News. And in 2001, he won the American Library Association's Margaret A. Edwards Award for Lifetime Achievement in Young Adult Literature. His young adult novels include The Contender, One Fat Summer, and Center Field. So let's try and connect some of the dots here, Robert Lipside, in terms of football. And I guess the real question is that can the league, the NFL, minimize brain damage and its long-term effects, which they've been in denial about, and whether the brutal collisions in football can be minimized without losing fans in this multi-billion-dollar spectator sport. So I guess that's my question. What is?
I really don't know. I mean, I watch football, and I used to, I covered football, and it's, on the one hand, it's kind of a guilty. It become a kind of a guilty pleasure. I enjoy watching the game. I enjoy the violence. And now that we know, now that we know that it causes so much damage, There is even a more a real sense to it. These are not cartoon men that we're watching. These are real guys who are using up the equity of their bodies to entertain us. So I love watching it. I'm kind of torn. What do I like better? Watching two 350-pound guys, probably on heavy juice, slam into each other, or a long, wonderful arching pass, at the end of which the receiver might very well get hit really hard. I feel a certain conscious pang, watching this, and I know that I didn't let my son play football, and I'm sure not going to let his son play football.
Well, but for example, in rugby, the players don't have the kind of protection that American footballers have, particularly with the metal helmet. And the metal helmet seems to be both a form of protection and a weapon, too. That does a lot of the damage. I don't know what the statistics are in rugby, but my understanding is that they don't have the same kind of brain damage. Is there any way that you can make American football more like rugby?
Well, my rugby friends seem to be really tough and crazy guys, and most of their injuries seem to be soft tissue injuries. But I think in the same way that it seemed as though the advent of boxing gloves caused more brain injury among boxers. I mean, before that, they would break a knuckle by the second round and not hit so hard anymore. I think the same thing, might really be true if you didn't have those, iron helmets slamming into each other. I don't think that they simply wouldn't hit each other as hard. But I think that there have to be much stronger rules about head-to-head hits, and even more important than that, Ian, is there is a medical culture within the NFL that has really been deleterious to the health of football players. I remember for years and years they would be shooting up these guys with all sorts of painkillers to get them back on the field, whether they were ready to go or not, so they can hit each other some more. I think that doctors certainly were complicitous in all the years that the NFL said there's no connection between our game and head trauma. So I think that there are a lot of things that they can do in terms of rule changes to make the game safer. But in so doing, they're not only going to turn off the present fan base, but they're also going to turn off the players, many of whom really grew up in this, quote, manly culture of hitting hard.
Well, just in the last minute, though, a lot of when I talked about connecting the dots, you had the murder-suicide in December of the Kansas City Chiefs linebacker, and then you had Junior Seau, who committed suicide as a result of his brain trauma. We're going to have a lot of this collateral damage, aren't we? If there are 4,000 lawsuits from former NFL players, that's just going to increase, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, and I think that there are so there are so many things that could be done, including probably more close psychological examination of these players. I mean, Jevon Belcher, the guy who shot his girlfriend and then shot himself in front of his coach at the parking lot for Kansas City Chiefs, was obviously not a stable personality who should not have had guns. I mean, this takes us into another area, but certainly maybe he was taking steroids, which is another thing. I mean, why are these guys so big? I mean, you have these incredible specimens, 350 pounds, and they can run and move like much smaller men. So these are, many of these have to be guys on juice.
Well, look, this is obviously we've really tied some connected some dots here, and I think we need another conversation. And I thank you for joining us here, Robert Lipsight. We've just run out of time. I'm sorry.
My pleasure. Have a good game.
You too. Again, I'm speaking with Robert Lipside, longtime sports and city columnist for the New York Times and the author of a recent memoir, An Accidental Sports Writer, just out in paperback, and Sports World, An American Dreamland. He was a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning and for NBC Nightly News. And in 2001, he won the American Library Association's Margaret A. Edwards Award for Lifetime Achievement in Young Adult Literature. His young adult novels include The Contender, One Fat Summer, and Center Field. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and the conversation continues at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Disappeared by half.